From Storyflow.
This is your daily audio brief for June 28th.
Theo here.
June 28th, Tech Desk.
Five stories from the last 24 hours, here's where I'd start.
Let's get into it. First from XDA developers. PowerToys is potentially getting a new feature that lets you alt-tab within an app.
So the latest tweak in PowerToys is all about reshaping the alt-tab experience, but only when you're inside a single app.
Instead of the usual system-wide switcher, a new option would let the shortcut cycle through the windows or tabs that belong to the current program, keeping you in the same context without hopping across the whole desktop. It's a small shift in the underlying logic. PowerToys is intercepting the keystroke and rerouting it to the app's own window manager rather than the OS's global list.
The idea came from folks who find themselves juggling multiple documents in the same suite, like several Word files or a bunch of Chrome tabs, and they want a quicker way to hop between them. By toggling this mode, Alt-Tab becomes a focused navigator instead of a broad switcher. If it lands in the next PowerToys release, you'll get a simple toggle in the settings, and the behavior will be on by default for apps that expose a list of their own windows.
It's a modest change, but it could smooth out that little friction when you're deep in a single workflow.
Next, second from InfoQ, AWS previews FinOps agent for cost analysis and optimization. What's different under the hood is that the FinOps agent runs as a managed service inside your account, pulling cost and usage data straight from the billing PIS and stitching it together with CloudTrail events. It then applies a lightweight anomaly detector that spots spikes, matches them to the underlying resource changes, and surfaces the reasoning without you having to write any queries. The agent also pushes those insights into the tools you already use, so that messages get a quick summary, while Jira tickets can be auto-created for the owners of the flagged resources. The handoff lets the team act on the same signal without switching contexts. Because it's a public preview, you can enable it with a single toggle, watch the first few alerts, and decide whether the automated routing fits your workflow before you commit to a broader rollout.
It's basically a plugin that turns raw spend data into actionable tickets, saving the usual back and forth of manual digging.
Up next, third from XDA developers. After years of bugs, KDE Plasma 6.8 is turning on triple buffering for NVIDIA GPUs by default. KDE's been quietly reworking how it talks to NVIDIA cards. The core change lies under the hood. The compositor now flips on triple buffering automatically, something that used to be a manual opt-in because the driver would misbehave. After a couple of years of patch hopping and workarounds, the team finally feels confident enough to ship it as the default in the 6.8 release.
What that means for you is smoother frame pacing, especially when you're juggling windows or doing light gaming.
The extra buffer absorbs those little hiccups that used to cause stutter, and because it's now the standard path, you won't have to tweak settings or chase down obscure config files.
It also lines up better with the new NVIDIA driver stacks, so the compositor and the driver speak the same language without the previous handshake glitches. In practice, you should notice a subtle but steady improvement in responsiveness without any extra steps on your side.
If you've been stuck on an older Plasma version because of the bug, the update should feel like the system finally let out a sigh and settled into a more relaxed rhythm.
Give it a spin and see how the extra buffer smooths out those everyday interactions.
And then, fourth from XDA developers.
Someone just released a Steam OS gaming PC before Valve even shipped its own.
I just heard someone rolled out a Steam OS desktop before Valve even shipped its first Steam machine.
And it's a neat little twist on the whole story.
They built the box around an AMD APU that's been tuned for the Steam client, so the OS boots straight into the big picture UI without the usual Windows hassle.
The hardware isn't top tier, but it's enough to push most current titles at 1080p with decent frame rates, and they've priced it a good chunk lower than the early Steam machines were rumored to cost.
What's interesting is how quickly the ecosystem is moving. Valve's hardware timeline looks a lot longer now that the community can already start testing games on a purpose-built Linux box. It feels like a small, practical step that could nudge more developers toward native Linux support, and it gives early adopters something to play with while we wait.
Next,
fifth from Hackaday.
World's biggest RC A380 is a big deal. RC planes are a lot of fun, and the bigger the better. Raymi RC has built the world's biggest RC A380 at 29 ft 8.83 m long,
with a 32-foot 9.75 m wingspan, and weighing 800 lb 3 in 62 kg, this 1/8 scale jumbo jet is not your typical model.
The fuselage is built from CNC cut TPS foam laid up with fiberglass on the outside and carbon fiber inside.
The wings have a combination of carbon, aluminum, foam, and wood components to handle the aerodynamic loads.
The attention to detail is wild. Instead of painting the windows, each one is an actual hole in the plane with a 3D printed window frame and acrylic window. You can actually see one falling out of the plane in the video below. An Airbus mechanic in the comments even notes the landing gear door order of operations are identical to the real thing.
If Raymi looks familiar, perhaps you remember his previous A380 build.
Much like the 747, the full-size A380 is no longer in production, but they can run on cooking oil while they are still flying.
Up next,
sixth from Slashdot. IBM is getting ready to scale quantum computing. This year,
the company is laying the groundwork to turn that technology into a fully-fledged, scalable business from an expensive science project.
IBM said last month it plans to form a new independent subsidiary called Anduin, a foundry to produce the silicon wafers needed to make quantum computing
processors.
IBM spent a decade building, testing, and improving quantum computing, reports the Wall Street Journal.
The venture is seeded by $1 billion investment from the Trump administration and another $1 billion of IBM's own cash. It will also provide a steady stream of wafers to continue developing its own quantum technology, positioning IBM to capture part of what the Boston Consulting Group projects will be a $90 billion to $170 billion market for quantum computing providers by 2024. Why? Anduin will give the company a new line of business in selling wafers to other quantum computing companies. The company also plans to spend an additional $9 billion over 5 years to advance the final stages of its quest to build a quantum mechanics-powered computer capable and reliable enough for widespread use, a goal known as fault tolerance. That computer, named Starling, is being targeted for 2029. With Anduin, IBM is thinking beyond Starling, or even a more powerful quantum computer planned for 2033.
Read more of this story at Slashdot.
And then,
7th from XDA developers.
You too can build this ESP32 plane tracker to keep an eye on the skies.
If you're into aviation and tinkering with devices, the past few weeks have been a goldmine for you.
We previously saw a Raspberry Pi product that turned your ceiling into a sky tracker, followed closely by a project that added the FAME functionality to a tidy desk device. Now, a few weeks later, we've seen a third aviation-based DIY project hit the market, and the funny part is it didn't begin its life as a flight tracker.
Next, 8th from 9 to 5 Mac.
MagSafe battery banks, best picks for your iPhone 17, iPhone 8, and more.
Apple slipped the MagSafe pack back into the iPhone Air lineup, and the price tag lands at $99.
It's impressively thin, but the cell inside is modest, so you'll feel the charge dip sooner than you'd like.
What's neat is how the new pack leans on the Qi 2 standard, meaning it can still pair with other wireless chargers if you need a boost.
That opens the door to high-capacity options that keep the magnetic snap while adding a few extra hours of juice. A handful of third-party mags have already hit the market, sporting larger batteries and similar alignment magnets.
They are a bit pricier, but the trade-off feels worth it if you're chasing all-day endurance.
If you're not on the air, the same logic applies. Pick a MagSafe compatible pack that matches your usage pattern, and you'll stay plugged in without the bulk of a traditional power bank.
Up next,
9th from Hackaday,
a standalone YouTube streaming rig.
I've been chewing on this little DIY streaming rig that Corey Miller put together, and the thing that really caught my eye is how the software does the heavy lifting. He starts with the Raspberry Pi 4 and the H2 camera, which is already a solid base, but the magic happens in the stack that turns the camera into a full-blown streamer.
A lightweight web UI lets you tweak settings on the fly, and you can hook up either another Pi or an ESP32-driven yellow display to get a tiny on-screen dashboard that shows bitrate, frame rate, and even lets you start or stop the feed without touching a mouse.
What's clever is the way the pipeline is stitched together. The Pi captures raw video, pipes it through a hardware-accelerated encoder, and then pushes the H.264 stream straight to YouTube's ingestion point.
Because the Pi's GPU handles the encoding, the CPU stays free enough to run the UI and any extra scripts you might want, like a simple alert overlay.
The whole thing runs off a single power supply, so you can tuck it into a small case and point it at a webcam or a DSLR with an HDMI capture dongle.
It's not the absolute simplest Pi-based streamer. You'll find there are a few extra steps to get the dashboard wired up, but the result is a self-contained box that you can leave on the desk and forget about.
For anyone who's tired of juggling a bulky PC, a capture card, and a separate streaming app, this feels like a tidy, low-profile alternative that still gives you the control you need for a reliable live feed.
And then,
10th from Slashdot.
That's according to new figures from America's Energy Information Administration. Cited in this report from Electrek, the growth was led by utility-scale solar plus 21.3%, hydropower plus 15.7%, small-scale solar in April alone, wind and solar each produced
more electricity than US coal plants, while the combination of solar and wind produced 57.0% more electricity than nuclear power.
Renewable energy just hit 30% of America's electricity generation.
America generated 10.06% more energy with renewables in the first 4 months of 2026 than it did in the same period the year before.
The mix of all renewables, including biomass and geothermal, accounted for 30.0% of total US electrical generation during the first third of 2026, up from 27.8% a year earlier. EIA reported that, in April, utility-scale solar capacity surpassed wind capacity for the first time, 160,208.1 MW versus 160,100.6 MW.
Further, utility-scale battery energy storage capacity increased by 17,073.5 MW, or 58.1%.
Nuclear added just 18.4 MW.
The combined capacity growth of all utility-scale renewable energy sources for the 12-month period, 55,980.3 MW, is two-thirds more, that is 67.6%, than that added during the previous 12 months, 33,392.0 MW. EIA projects no new nuclear generating capacity
and a net decline of 5,200.5 MW in fossil fuel capacity.
Read more of this story at slash dot.
That's it for today. Tomorrow morning, whatever the night brings.
Stay curious.